Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sanderlanch podcast. Today, we are discussing chapters 56 and 57 of The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson, wherein Dalinar and Sadeas team up for a plateau assault, and it goes, and there's some discussion about The Way of Kings. And then in the other chapter, Kaladin is having some more, he's having some experiences and some doubts, and even has maybe a little bit of a fight with Syl, and then someone tells him a story, and everything is better, or something. I'm Data, and with me today is
Jack,
Jamie,
and Joe.
So hang on to something, everybody. The Sanderlanch is about to begin. Two more chapters, some interesting stuff. I want to hear you guys' reactions. What did you think of these two chapters?
So the first chapter was really good. With the battle scene was really intense, and I was enjoying it. Like, I liked Dalinar's little aside. Just like, I'm really going to figure out why they do the pairs. Is the second one a female? I don't know. While he's just in the process of doing his murdering. And then he pulls off the big damn heroes for Sadeas. That was all really cool. It was all immediately driven from my mind the second Kaladin bumped into the storyteller.
Yep.
And all week since I read the chapters, I've just been like, oh man, that bit with Hoid was so friggin' cool. So, yeah, first chapter and the first half of the second chapter were all really great, but the instant Hoid showed up and he and Kaladin hung out, I'm just like, I am all in on this. That was just brilliant. I loved it. Loved his story. I have thoughts.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I told you guys, there's people have feelings about that, and I didn't want to bias you too much last time by just being like, this is generally one of people's favorite chapters of the book. So, and I assume you can see why at this point, given Dax.
Yeah. Day. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it was great. I love the story Hoid told. I love the image of him sitting there with a flute. He's like Ron Burgundy playing jazz flute over the fire.
There's a comparison I hadn't made.
Would you like to hear Mr. Burgundy play his jazz flute?
I think we've just cast Hoid.
Oh my gosh.
Oh.
That would be a casting.
No, yeah, that's not a good plan.
I mean, he could dress up in crazy outfits and you know.
Will Ferrell, he
would be a choice.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing is, though, he is one of those actors who, if you give him the right, he's known primarily as a comedic actor, but if you give him the right script and right direction, he can pull off dramatic. Stranger Than Fiction is an excellent movie.
Yeah.
That was my first thought, too, except that he's doing a lot of funny stuff in Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah, that's true, too.
True enough. But, I mean, Hoid's doing a lot of funny stuff here.
No, you're not wrong. That's true.
I mean, Will Ferrell is the king's wit. Like, just insulting everyone. It's not that far removed from Will Ferrell's bit.
Will Ferrell just sitting on a stool insult. Yeah, no, okay.
Yeah. Does Will Ferrell do insult comedy? I don't feel like that's one of his things.
It may not be his main thing, but he could do it.
Now I'm looking up what Will Ferrell's been in to try to remember if there's any. Because that's the only dramatic role that comes to my mind immediately was Stranger Than Fiction. And then...
So he had two roles in the Lego Movie, and the second one was much more laid back and dramatic. It wasn't played for comedy at all.
Mm.
Apparently he played baseball. It says in 2010 at a minor league baseball game in Round Rock, Texas, Ferrell was introduced between innings as a Venezuelan pitcher for the Round Rock Express named Billy Ray Rojo Johnson, wearing a false mustache and carrying a bag of beer cans to the mound. He threw one pitch and was ejected after a staged fight.
Okay. That's awesome. Is that on YouTube?
I feel like it must be, right? Oh, I gotta go out and find that now. Okay, let's see. Will Ferrell filmography. Here we go. This is Austin Powers.
Of all the digressions, I was not expecting a Will Ferrell digression today.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I remember that.
That's right. Yeah, he plays Marshall Willinally.
Also, where do we get the digressions before we've gotten through everyone's thoughts on the chapters?
I know, right? I've gone down a rabbit hole already.
It's fine. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. This is a lot of comedy. Is Land of the Lost a comedy?
Yeah. Yes.
I didn't see that one. So.
It was not good.
Yeah, I don't know that there's anything on here that I feel like is just really dramatic.
Land of the Lost did have that lady from that pie show that you liked with Lee Pace.
Oh, yes. I know who you're talking about. Pushing Daisies. Great show. Love that show. And her name was Anna Faris? Is that what it was? Yeah, Anna Faris. No, Anna Friel.
I was about to say, Anna Faris Friel. Is a completely different person.
Friel. Yeah. I don't know how you say her name. She's like British, although she did not play British in that show.
Well, neither did Lee Pace. He's British too, isn't he?
Oh yeah, you might be right. I don't recall offhand, but that doesn't. No, he's an American actor.
Oh, okay, thought he was British.
Okay, sorry. Back to this book that we're
good old
doing.
Ronan.
The reason that we're all here today. Good chapters. I think I'm in the same camp as Jack, really. I liked the first chapter and I was like, oh, yeah, the two armies are together and, you know, Dalinar might see Kaladin, you know, in his stance next to the bridge or whatever. I was like, it's getting real, like, they're getting close. Could happen. Did not think that Thaddeus was going to be in such an amount of danger. It does seem strange, though, that, like, Gavilar was the only one who really cared about learning about the Parshendi. It does feel like you should really do a little bit of research on your enemy.
Right.
Maybe to see what's going on. It strikes me as odd that they've gone into battle and just haven't given it any thought. But, you know, if they thought about it, maybe we wouldn't have a story. So here we go. There's got to be some shortcomings there. And then I'm glad that we finally, like, addressed the elephant in the room between Kaladin and Teft. That's pretty good. And then Syl, I'm like, yes, we're starting to get answers. And yes, Hoid, as soon as I was like, there's a guy sitting there playing the flute in a black uniform, I was like, oh, this has got to be Hoid, surely. And it gave me very strong vibes back to Warbreaker when he was telling the story with the sand and the leaves. And I was like, man, I could read an entire story of Hoid telling a story. It was awesome. It was really, really cool. One of the things you can picture as well. We picture a lot of the battle scenes and all of that sort of stuff, but it was reading him telling the story felt like I was watching him tell the story, which I guess is the whole point because Kaladin is watching Hoid tell the story in the smoke. So, you know, well done, Brandon. You did it. It was good.
Yeah, I feel like I agree. It's very, it conjures a very good picture, not only of the story itself, but like, picturing Kaladin like looking at the smoke and seeing these things, but like they're so wispy that he's not quite sure that he sees them. Like even that, like I can picture that really well. So this is it's very cinematic and it was fun.
I hope we do see him again soon.
Yeah, he's off somewhere, so who knows if we'll see him again soon. At least he made Kaladin feel better about himself or something.
Maybe.
At the very least, Kaladin seemed more confident after the fact. So,
Yeah, these were good chapters. The battle was fun. Yeah, it is kind of interesting to be inside Dalinar's head. He's like in the middle of this fight, but he keeps having all these thoughts. You think somebody like that would not want to be that distracted during the battle? Which I think he kind of mentions at one point. He's like, I gotta pay more attention to what I'm doing. But yeah, it was kind of interesting to get that perspective in the midst of battle and him getting sick again. From being like, oh, I killed all these people. This is gross. And then, Sadeus almost getting defeated and, being thankful that Dalinar was there. Although Dalinar's right. It's like they probably wouldn't have brought two armies if they hadn't brought two armies. So should probably be more careful with that kind of stuff. And yeah, I mean, who doesn't love Hoid? Who doesn't love the sexy drifter? Coming in, drifting in, playing a flute, telling a story. It was a good time. It was a good time. It is kind of sad that his coming kind of overshadows like Maps's death. We're like, oh no, Maps died at the beginning. Like
nobody cares anymore.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, I mean, Hoyt's here, so let's forget about that guy.
Yeah, but like Maps is like another one of those guys who was just kind of, oh yeah, he's there, and we don't really see much from him except the occasional reminder that he's still there.
Like, I mean, he's a very jovial dude.
Yeah, but like he only got infrequently mentioned.
Yeah, Dax making me feel bad about caring about Maps. Why are you doing that?
Thanks about Maps so much, jeez.
Oh man. I guess I'm just gonna jump off the podcast now, guys. I don't know.
Joe's favorite character is dead, and so
Maps. Give me the maps, Scott.
Anyway. Dax only happy. Gosh.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I mean Hoyt's here. Who doesn't love a good Hoyt interlude? And yeah, Kaladin may now learn about his powers. He's like being like Teft. Tell me what you know. So that's super exciting. You know, we're 80% through the book, and finally one of our main characters is like, I should probably figure out what's going on.
Well, and after Teft has spent like several chapters dropping these super obvious hints, it's like, yeah. Okay, just dude, come on.
Just give it up, bro. Just tell me what the dealio is. I like how he also, I mean, we're going to get into it, but like he also accidentally lashed something. It's just like, oh, that could just happen by accident, huh?
But you also have an interesting point about the two armies thing, where it's like Dalinar does point, it's like, oh okay, we brought two armies and then they brought two armies, so they could have always just brought more guys. Like, why didn't they do this before?
Yeah,
and so
I almost think, like, which I don't know anything about the Barshendi culture. I mean, we obviously, you know, none of us except for possibly, you know, kind of what their deal is, but like it almost seems like they want the fighting to continue to just be able to fight. And it's like, for them, it's not about like winning. It's more about like having a battle. I don't know. Like, it almost seems like they're more interested in just fighting in and of itself. And the gem hearts are just like, it's, I guess if I had to describe it, I'd say to the Parshendi, at least to me so far, it almost seems like it's a game to them. Like, obviously, death is not good. They don't want their people to die. But at the same time, it's like, it doesn't seem to me that the stakes are as high for the Parshendi as they are for the Alethi. Although, a lot of the High Princes have been treating this war like a game. So it maybe in some ways they are very similar. I don't know. But I just don't understand. I guess I don't understand the motive of the Parshendi, right?
Right.
So, like, but the way they treat things, besides they're dead, obviously they're very reverent of their dead, but like the way they treat things, it's almost like they think it's like, it's just like about, it's like strategy. It's just a game. So I'd be interested to know, like, what is their deal? Why do they care about these gem hearts? What is the point?
That's just like the continuing question that in a weird way, we're in the same boat as the Alethi, because they have never bothered to find out that much, especially since Kavalar died, about the Parshendi. And we just don't know, because we don't get a Parshendi perspective. So
yeah, we're only in the Alethi perspective. And since they haven't bothered to figure it out neither, and that we haven't had the opportunity to. So
yeah, maybe at some point we'll get some Parshendi viewpoints or something
someday.
But yeah, there's always another secret. There's more mystery. There's so much mystery at this point. There's too much mystery. Yeah. Like, what does any of it mean?
It's too mysterious. I know too little. Like Bill Murray in that movie.
Yeah, like Bill Murray, the man who knew too little, I was going to say.
Yeah. It's a good movie, Walter.
I Am the Walrus?
Cuckoo Cachoo.
Okay, let's get into these chapters.
It's wrong Lennon. Gosh.
Okay, our first chapter is That Storming Book. And our epigraph is from a Thalen sailor. It says, the light grows so distant, the storm never stops. I am broken, and all around me have died. I weep for the end of all things. He has won. Oh, he has beaten us. So that's nice.
Kind of a downer.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, they're never very cheery, are these epigraphs of people's last words. So, so we go in, and Dalinar is in a fight. He's on his horse, slicing up Parshendi with his shard blade. And we've heard before that they fight in pairs, but we get more info in this chapter. There's always like one with a beard and one without a beard. And at one point he's like, I don't know, is it like a like an apprenticeship thing? You got a young warrior paired with an older warrior.
He speculates that they might be female. It's like, is this a wedding ceremony for them? You're not married. You're not married till you battle together.
The wedding fight. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we have the test of can you put IKEA furniture together? Three lots of furniture, and if you that can make true. It through that, then you can get married.
Yep.
Nice.
Solid. Yep.
Got that advice from my boss once.
Do the IKEA test.
Yeah, that's we have issues there because I like to follow the directions that come with the furniture, and my wife does not.
Yeah. Enjoy your affordable Swedish crap.
Classic. Dalinar is feeling the thrill, and he's got just having a good time fighting, killing people, just mounds of corpses around him. It's just a great, great time. And then he notices like the facial structure on one of these beardless Parshendi, and he's like, "Wait, is that a woman? No, it couldn't be."
The Parshendi are just less stick up their bum about gender roles.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, a lot of cultures have gender roles. The Parshendi really take that shit seriously.
Yeah.
It's like, you're allowed to read, you're not allowed to read. Like, yeah. All right. Jeez.
Also, it's like, is this going to awaken something in Dalinar?
Like what?
It's like, man, Parshendi women, kind of hot.
Maybe. Navani's going to be all jealous.
She's putting on the makeup to try and make herself look more like one.
Ooh. She's like, oh, that's how Parshmen were made. Got it.
And he like, as he gets closer, tries to examine one for any signs of stubble. Like, maybe that one's just young, hasn't grown a beard yet. Maybe he just likes to shave. I don't know. But he's kind of like, oh, I mean, the body shape is kind of hard to tell because they have that armor that grows out of them. But maybe these are like husband-wife pairs. How crazy is that? And he realizes, like, we've been fighting for 6 years now and no one knows anything about them. Not even their gender. He has to remind himself, like, you're supposed to be killing them right now, not worrying about their culture. Come on.
Yeah. Less think, more kill. Kill, kill, kill. Gotta kill, always kill. Time to kill. View to a kill.
James Bond movie, nice.
Yeah. No time to die. You only live twice.
That one's a good one. Well, I mean, except for the horrible racism.
Yeah, I was about to say the racism.
Honestly, when you said it, my first thought was Live and Let Die, which I'm a big fan of. And then I realized
Live and Let Die. Diamonds Are Forever, From Rush With Love, Dr. No. I mean, the list could go on.
There's what, 24 of them? 23?
I think a little bit more than that.
Okay, hold on.
No, the digression track.
Oh dear.
When there suddenly was a question, now I have to go in and find the answer to it.
I want to guess 26.
Okay, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, if you count Never Say Never Again, which I think there's
some debate about. Which you should not. Counts.
Yeah. I mean, come on, guys. Give it to me. I said 26.
I mean, I'll give you that was quite prescient in the numbers, but sorry, like Never Say Never Again. No. No.
Is it just like in a time paradox or what?
No, well, it was
a weird one.
It's basically a remake of Thunderball.
Yeah.
Because there was an issue with the rights of Thunderball.
They bring Sean Connery back in the middle of Roger Moore's run to do this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the movie.
It's made by a different studio as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Nah.
It's just a weird one.
It's in many ways. It's in the same league as the old Casino Royale with Peter Sellers.
Oh, right? Yeah, the original. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, technically, yes, it's a Bond. It is a movie with James Bond in it, but it's not a James Bond movie.
Sure. So while we're on the digression, everybody's favorite Bond, you know, hit me with it.
Give me a minute.
I mean, he is the original.
Man. You mean actor? Oh, I thought you mean film. Yes, Connery.
Oh, sure. Go for the film, too, then. But I got to say, I mean, there's something about this Daniel Craig guy.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he's my second.
Yeah, he really did something.
I've not managed to stay awake through a Bond film. I'm willing to give it a go again. I just have this affliction where you put me in front of a TV and I go to sleep. So it's nothing against the Bond franchise or anything.
I mean, let's be clear, Jamie. The original Bonds are extremely misogynistic, so it's not like it's not like they're good movies.
Yes, but I can appreciate them for what they were at the time.
Sure.
I'm happy to do that. But I do really like the Daniel Craig Bond movies, and I did really like Skyfall. I even stayed awake in the cinema for that one.
Oh my gosh, nice. Impressive.
Yeah, and it was late at night too. So that was really good. I think that was just really, really well put together.
And what a theme song. Way to go, Adele.
Hmm.
See, my problem with Daniel Craig is, like, Casino Royale, loved it.
Yeah, it is
when
good.
His first movie out, James Bond was like, oh, this is the guy. This is amazing. Quantum of Solace, horrible. Spectre,
yeah, it's not a good movie.
Horrible. No Time to Die, the best thing about No Time to Die
Don't spoil it.
I'm
not going to spoil it. The best thing about No Time to Die is not James Bond at all. It's what's her name from
Ana de Armas
from Knives Out. Yes, Ana de Armas. Her character, like I she's in there for like 10 minutes, and I left the movie like, I want a movie about her. That was much more interesting than anything James Bond did.
She was phenomenal. Yes,
I don't get everybody's Ana de Armas love. I don't think she's that good.
Sorry, I came out of Knives Out just going, it's like she is our newfound queen of cinema, and I will die on that hill.
Knives Out, I thought was garbage. I do like The Glass Onion a lot, but Knives Out I thought was garbage.
I would say Knives Out was way better than Glass Onion, although I did like Glass Onion.
Yeah, I'd say I like Knives Out more, but I think the fact that it came out of nowhere and caught me completely off guard, whereas going to Glass Onion, I knew roughly what to expect.
I think what hit me with Knives Out was that it was like, I figured out who it was in like the first 10 minutes. And I was like, okay, cool.
But it's kind of like those, it's like a modern take on the Agatha Christie kind of feel for me. Yeah. And I eat that stuff up every day. So even was like, you're like, okay, I think I figured it out. You still enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
It's right.
It's not everyone's cup of tea, but that was like, I could watch that over and over and over, and I would be so happy.
Yeah.
I mean, in Columbo, you figure out at the beginning of every episode who did it, and that's true. The fun part. And honestly, though, Knives Out totally threw me, because you think from the beginning you know what happened. And so you're like, oh, this isn't the kind of movie where I'm supposed to figure it out. We know exactly what happened. And then when you get towards the end, it's like, oh, wait a second, we didn't know what happened. And I didn't see it coming, but that could just be me.
Yeah, speaking of mystery movies and Agatha Christie and all that, the last Poirot movie I actually really liked. The one that's set
A Murder in Venice.
Yeah.
Haunting in Venice, yeah.
It was really
good.
I liked the movie. It annoyed me that it said it was based on, like, the book. And I read the book that it was supposedly based on not long before the movie came out, and there was nothing, not even slightly similar.
Just had Poirot in it, that was it.
Well, yeah, because it's like it's called like a Halloween party or something, the book. And so I don't remember if the Venice one was set at Halloween. That may have been the only similarity.
It was. But, yeah, it was.
So, yeah. But it's just like there's like the book is about a kid who gets murdered at a Halloween party. And like there's nothing at all. It's so weird.
Yeah, that is pretty different.
And in England. So it's just the Venice part seems kind of random too. Although Venice is a cool place to.
I wonder why they changed it so dramatically. I think that's cool. Research that.
Kenneth Branagh was like, I want to shoot in Venice.
Well, you seem to be on the tangent episode. Kenneth Branagh, probably my favorite movie with Kenneth Branagh in it, is a film called Dead Again with Emma Thompson. Ooh. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. No. It's really hard to find a copy. I've never found it on a streaming service, but it's really hard to find a copy on physical media. And it's basically, so Emma Thompson, Kenneth Branagh, she's lost her memory or something. And he's, I think, a psychologist or something, has to try and help her find the memory. But it goes into like unlocking past lives and the entanglement of souls through their lives and stuff like that. And it's really, really, really good. I don't want to go too far into it because there's a few mysteries along the way and stuff. It's not like a classic murder mystery type thing, but the cast is top notch, and it was a really, really good film. So if you ever manage to find it dead again, I would highly recommend it.
Interesting. I searched the two of them to find information on this movie while you were talking, and did not know the two of them were married for 8 years.
Yep.
And then
they were
split up after he started an affair with Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, that's awkward.
Especially when you're with Harry Potter.
Yeah. Another Kenneth Branagh film that I really like is his version of Hamlet on film. Really good version of Hamlet if you like Shakespeare, but want to see it like in a film. Really cool, kind of like late 1800s take on Hamlet. Pretty fun.
All right, that was those were some tangents. All right.
Yeah, we started with Bond, and then we went down a real rabbit hole, didn't we?
What topics will be covered today on the sandwich?
Who knows?
Everything except the book.
Yep.
Oh, you could just cut it all out. I just the tangent episode.
Nah.
Nothing related to the book in this episode.
Yeah, cut it in. Let's just record it for 3 hours and then just like cut out all the tangent bits and then put them into their own episode later.
Yeah, when we don't have an episode.
Yeah.
So, okay, no, they're in the battle. Dalinar's killing people, and he gets that nausea feeling again. He's like, oh, not again. Man, why am I getting sick of killing people again? How ridiculous.
Oh, man, what did Hoyt put in my food?
And he's thinking back when the thrill had been the strongest, subduing the High Princes with Gavilar during their youths, forcing the Vedans back, fighting against the Herdazians. We find out once his thirst for battle had nearly led him to attack his brother. But he held himself back. So, like, you got to really seriously be in a kind of bloodlust from this thrill if you're going to go and attack your brother in the middle of a battle. And the problem is, when he's out of, like, the thrill, he doesn't fight as well. And they start kind of, you know, getting some hits in on him. And, like, at one point, he's even like, I shouldn't feel bad for killing Parshendi. Like, this is right. We're getting revenge for my brother or whatever. And then he looks over and he's like, hey, what's that on the next plateau? Oh, that's another army. And he's like, oh, we didn't expect this. Like, we should have. We started bringing two armies, so they started bringing two armies. We know so little about them.
It's like, I did have to stop and think, wait, the Parshendi of, like, I understand why the Alethi will, you know, hold off, only one army at a time, because they're all in competition with each other. Why the fuck are the Parshendi doing that? Like, what have they got to lose?
Well, and he even says here, like, they have less reason even, because for the Alethi, they have these bridges to worry about. They have to get everybody across the chasm with bridges. So bringing more people slows you down if you don't have more bridges. And only so many people can fit on a plateau, right? So, but for the Parshendi, they just jump the chasms. So why would they need to bring fewer people?
This is... And I'm glad Joe mentioned it earlier, but I'm like, this really made me think maybe they really just don't care about winning all that much. Because if they can just jump over the canyons and they can just bring an army out whenever they feel like it, they could have swarmed this plateau ages ago, like landed in the Alethi camp and driven them back out ages ago.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I feel like their overall goal cannot be winning. Like it's gotta be. There's gotta be something else at stake for them in this. Like, just like, strategy, way of life, something.
Yeah, are they trying to just keep the Alethi here and away from other places? Is that what they're up to?
They're sure getting a lot of themselves killed for that goal.
I mean, in an army, you make, like, sometimes troops are going to have to be sacrificed, but if this is, like, their overall plan, yeah, it doesn't sound nice, but that is something that happens in war.
True. Yeah.
So the other army is approaching from this other direction that... they kind of catch Sadeus in between the two Parshendi armies. So his people are in trouble, including Sadeus himself, who's fighting. It says Dalinar notes that he often fights like at the back of his army, basically. And so that's the front. That's the new front is the back when this other army shows up. And Dalinar has his Cobalt Guard send some messages. I think I've mentioned it before, but I think the Cobalt Guard is a cool name for his personal guard.
Yeah. Yep. The Cobalt Guard. I wonder if Sadeus is like the Jade Guard.
Maybe. No, I think Sadeus is. Isn't his armor like red or something?
I thought it was green.
Yeah, I think it's green in this.
Oh, his banner is green. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think his shard plate is red, but his banners are green.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
Sadeus, the Christmas High Prince.
Yeah.
And Dalinar doesn't even paint his armor, so I don't know why I was bringing armor color into it in the first place.
Dude loves those garish colors.
Gotta make sure you see him, man. And so Dalinar realizes that Sadeus is going to fall. Like, there's no one close enough to help. So he calls his horse and he's like, let's go. We're going to go in and save him. And so he cuts a swath through the Parshendi army straight to where Sadeus is, like, in trouble. And, I mean, he talks about it as he's riding his horse through. He's just, like, slicing them down, back, like, right and left, making a hole. But it's not until, like, the end of the chapter when he looks back and he realizes, like, holy shit, how many people did I kill?
You're my boy, Sadeus. You're my boy.
Gallant, even his horse, even takes a gash. He's like, no, my horse, you bastards. And as he's getting there, he's in the, and yeah, Sadeus's men were forest green. Sadeus's banner, like, falls, and he has to throw himself off his horse and, like, get in there to try to save him. And Sadeus is, like, on the ground. They're bashing on him. And Dalinar makes it just in time. It says, it was time to let the Blackthorn loose. And so he has to, like, once he gets there, he has to, like, stand basically above Sadeus, protecting his fallen form and slicing people up. And it's harder, like, pressing through them and kind of, like, having that momentum was safer for him than having to stand in one place and they're coming at him from all sides, essentially. So he starts taking hits. And at one point, Sadeus, not having a shard blade, he uses what we saw Dalinar use earlier to dig that latrine, was his big war hammer. And so Dalinar picks up Sadeus's hammer and just starts, like, using it to launch groups of Parshendi away. Because if he cuts them down with the blade, they just make piles all around him and hem him in. So he has to, like, throw them. Which, once again, this would be a very cinematic, very badass moment to see. And now the Parshendi see two shard bearers ripe for the plucking. And, you know, shards are very valuable, so even they want them. It makes this a very bloody stand that he's making here. And just when, like, parts of his plate are cracking and breaking, and he's not sure that he can hold out any longer, Adolin comes through. I like that it's like, suddenly a wave of Parshendi died that he hadn't attacked. And here comes Adolin to help out with the Cobalt Guard right behind him.
All these Parshendi just start dying. He's like, I don't think that was me, but I can't rule it out.
I got eye lasers or something. This is awesome. And Adolin's like, why exactly did you do something that insane? And he says, because I knew that you could handle the army if I fell. Which, I guess that's sweet, but geez. But Sadeus is alive. Like, Dalinar wasn't even sure of that for most of this battle. He just was doing his best. And Sadeus, like, pops up with a grin, basically, when he recovers. And he's like, hey, how's the battle going? And Adolin's like, oh, yeah, we're winning. Like, we basically routed them. Our men are cutting the Gemheart 3 free right now. And Sadeus is like, ah, we win again. Oh, man, Dalinar, this is awesome.
Yeah. Isn't this cool being friends again?
And this might be the concussion talking, but I love you, man.
Yeah.
I love the exchange. Once in a while, it appears that senile old brain of yours can come up with a good idea or two. And Dalinar's like, we're the same age.
Yeah, yeah, but you know you're old.
And Sadeus goes, tonight all my soldiers feast like light eyes, which I'm sure does not include the Bridgemen. So.
I did and wonder also, that.
Yeah, and also, like, feast like light eyes, huh? Well, dick.
All my soldiers will feast like light eyes. Rock is like, my time has come.
Cook you I up know a exactly stew so fine. So fine.
So much chuldung.
Yeah, I'm going to fill it with the chuldung. And the blood of my enemies.
And when Sadeus is like, why would you do that? Dalinar says, well, you don't abandon your allies on the battlefield. It's one of the codes. And like, he's like, that honor of yours is going to get you killed. Not that I am going to complain about it today. And here's where the title comes in, where it's like, Dalinar's like, if I should die, I would do so having lived my life right. It's not the destination that matters, but how one arrives there. And it's like, that comes from the Way of Kings. And here's where Sadeus is like, that's storming book. And then he's like, you know what? Maybe I'll let you explain it to me. I'd like to understand you again, old friend. So yeah, Sadeus and Dalinar have a nice little moment.
Hey, maybe we can sit together and some woman can read the book to us both.
Yeah. Like men.
It'll be like a slumber party. Yeah.
Be like, then maybe after we can ask her to make us a milkshake.
But there's where he looks back and he's like, he sees all the guys he killed punching through to get to Sadeas. He's like, there's like dozens, maybe like hundreds that I killed just now. Mm. I haven't killed that many people in a while. Jeez.
Yeah. Oh, slacking. Guys, should I have a milkshake later? Or...
Yes.
Nah, my stomach's already kind of full. I shouldn't do that.
That's the internal bleeding, Sadeas. Let's get you to a doctor.
And we end with him being like, you're going to need luck to understand me, Sadeas, because I'm not understanding myself real well right now. And then we get a picture of plants.
Yeah. Trees, you know? I'm going to be loving these trees. Make that seed work right in that dirt. Get you a tree.
Moving on from that.
That is a joke from SNL.
Oh, okay. So our next chapter is Wander Sail. And this is, I feel like, one of the more dramatic epigraphs from a 16-year-old. Sample is of particular note, it says. I hold the suckling child in my hands, a knife at his throat, and know that all who live wish me to let the blade slip, spill its blood upon the ground over my hands, and with it gain us further breath to draw.
So, baby Hitler. They're contemplating killing baby Hitler and are having a hard time deciding what they want to do.
Oh, son of
a... I read more into it. They're maybe in a difficult situation and the baby's crying and they need the baby to stop because maybe they're being attacked. Like, yeah. That's where I went. Sorry for a dark turn.
It feels bigger to me because it says, all who live wish me to do this, which just, that's a lot of people, unless I guess there's not many people left alive.
Yeah. Baby Hitler, I'm telling you.
Mm. Yeah, true.
But yeah, anyway.
If you could go back in time and kill baby Hitler, would you do it?
No.
Okay.
Who knows what world we would be living in today?
I have learned enough to not know to fuck with the space-time continuum.
Exactly.
Sure, sure.
Sci-fi has taught me much.
Sci-fi? The science, the fiction of science has taught me many things.
Someone bring me another knife so that I may properly stab this baby!
So we jump into Maps dying, and he's doing one of these last word things as well.
Yeah.
And all the world was shattered. The rocks trembled with their steps, and the stones reached toward heavens. We die, we die. That's nice.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It took me a minute to realize they're on a battlefield. I thought he was just telling a story over the campfire till I got to the next sentence. I'm just like, man, Maps is really getting into the storytelling. Watch out, Hoyt.
Dark storytelling, dude, yeah.
And then he died.
Yep. So I like that the arrow hit him in the birthmark that supposedly looks like Alethkar, which is where he got his nickname of Maps, because he has a map of Alethkar as a birthmark.
I completely forgot about that.
It's a real downer.
Yeah.
No, my maps.
I will admit, last time, like, I do remember, like, the last set of chats we read, he showed up and was, like, chatting a bit in them. I'm just like, I forgot you were here. Oh, are you about to die? And then he fucking did.
And then he did. Dad, you could have predicted that shit, man.
Yeah, now everyone's just, like, listening is just like, this man reads from a card.
Sure, you thought that, Dak, uh-huh.
No retroactive predicaments on this show.
And I like that somebody finally addresses this, though, where they're like, what was that weird shit that he was saying? And like, oh, yeah, that just happens sometimes.
Apparently happens a lot.
I mean, it's not much of addressing it, but at least somebody said something.
Well, Tiff does say it's like happening more often these days, so I'm just like, ooh, what does that signify?
Right. So we lost Maps and Eric, who I don't think that we know Eric.
I was going to say, who the fuck is Eric?
Yeah, you know, he's my best friend, Eric.
Yeah.
You guys don't know Eric?
No.
He's going to feel really bad.
Well, he's dead now.
No, not the Eric I know.
This Eric is dead.
Who? But I mean... like they can't be too broken up about Eric's death because, like, Kaladin lists off the people he's failed and Eric's name is not there. Where's the justice for Eric, Kaladin?
No justice for
him. He was the new guy.
Could have been. Honestly, we haven't heard about them getting many new people. The last two were Lopin and the Parshendi guy, or the Parshman guy, sorry.
The Aussie and the Crab.
Yep.
That'd be an interesting story to Hoyt to tell.
Yeah, that's a Hoyt story right there.
Aussie and the Crab.
And so, yes, Kaladin is depressed again. Like, I can't believe I should have been faster. I should have saved him. And he thinks about all the people he saved. Maps, Dunny, or failed to save. We know Maps and Dunny. Amark, Goshal, Dalet. Well, we knew Dalet. Nalma and Tien.
We've heard Goshal before. I don't remember who it is, but I know we've heard the name before.
I bet it was another one of these lists. Now I'm going to find out. Let's search for Goshal.
Goshal. Oh, Goshal.
Yes, he's been married. He's been mentioned twice before in lists of people that Kaladin has failed.
Oh.
So that's where we've heard Goshal. In the meantime, Lopin has recovered the newest pouch of spheres. So they've done this four times now where they got spheres shot into the bottom of the bridge so they could pick them up. So this is working out well. And do you have any trouble? No, Goncho. Easy as tripping a horn eater. And Rock's like, I heard that. And they managed to get a big old coil of rope from Lopin's cousin that he talked about. And they dropped it down in the chasm. So hopefully that'll be useful down there. And also, Gaz is conspicuously missing. Kaladin's like, well, why didn't he come on the bridge run? It's the only mention we get of it. But
this is concerning.
Maybe. I mean, we don't exactly love Gary, so.
No, I mean, no. But he, like, talking to people who have always been there, Gaz has always been there.
It's true.
Old Gary. We hardly knew him.
Maybe Hashal ate him.
Yeah. Or maybe he got crazy because he didn't have to pay off that debt anymore and he did something nuts.
I do like the note that Kaladin has where he has reason to not like Dalinar because he's like, Dalinar always shows up late. He probably blames his slow chul pulled bridges. How convenient that his men get to cross without archery fire on them. Which is true, I guess, but it's kind of a negative way of looking at it.
Yeah.
We're talking about Kaladin.
Yeah, right. And he's like, I mean, Sadeas and Dalinar are winning more battles by working together, but it doesn't help the bridgemen not die. So presumably this is like the same battle where Sadeas almost dies, and Kaladin is not really paying much attention to it.
I imagine if Sadeas died, Kaladin would be like, oh, thank Christ.
I guess the question is, who takes over after Sadeas? Does he have a kid that would take? We haven't heard about it.
That's a good point. Like he mentions, oh yeah, I'm the same age as Dalinar, and it's like, yeah, Dalinar's got two adult kids. Do you have any family?
Yeah, maybe Amaram is his cousin. So Roshon is also his cousin. They're all the worst dudes, all the worst light eyes are cousins.
It's just one big shitty family.
I mean, they did say Amaram was coming, so
it's true.
You know, he is a an heir, I guess, to the High Princedom.
Could be.
Yeah. You know what J.K. Rowling says? Enemies of the heir, beware.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Kaladin has a moment where he opens up a little bit. And he's like, when I fought in Amaram's army, I dreamed about coming here where the soldiers were real soldiers and everyone would treat each other with fairness and have discipline. And Teth just snorts. And then Scar's like, oh, Dalinar colon soldiers don't act like that. Dalinar's so great. And Kaladin's like, when will I stop hearing about Dalinar storming colon?
that made me giggle because of Dak and all his predictions. It's just I started reading that and I started giggling. I'm like, yeah, he hates Scar.
And then we find out that Bridge 4 has a salute that they've come up with to, you know, so they have their own special thing to do. And they give Kaladin the salute where they like cross their wrists together.
I'm sorry, are they doing the Wakanda Forever?
Maybe.
It's above their head, isn't it?
Sorry?
Is it above their head? I'm not sure. I read it as they're putting their arms up quite high, but I could be wrong.
No, it's like over their chest. So basically it is Wakanda Forever, I think, except that this would predate that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, this was 2010. That movie was, what, 2018?
Yeah, something like that.
Yep.
But yes, I hadn't thought about that before, but basically, yes, that appears to be what they're doing.
Have fun trying to unsee that.
Bridge four forever.
Bridge four forever.
So he wants to. Kaladin. Teft has taken a bit of a cut, and Kaladin wants to heal it. And Teft is like, no, I'm fine. And he tells Lopin to go get me my stuff. And Lopin gives him the salute too, but Lopin only has the one arm, so it's just like. And then Teft is like, so. Yeah, right. Teft is like, so how do you feel? Any weird experiences happening? And Calvin's saying like, dude, this is the fifth time in 2 days you've asked me that. What the hell are you talking about?
Well, you know, just like, you feeling okay? You're like, you look good. I mean.
And instead of explaining, Teft tries to punch him. And Kaladin totally blocks it. But in doing so, apparently, like, pulls in some stormlight from the spheres that he's carrying. Because Lopin's like, Gancho, you're glowing.
So, between this and the lashing he does, it's like, so he's getting whatever Seth has?
The powers do seem similar. And so, yeah, he has accidentally attached the medical pack to the rim of the water barrel. He, like, tugs on it. It's like, it won't come off. And there's, like, wisps of light coming off of it. And, like, he's like, what did you do to me? And Teft just, like, smiles at him, which, all right. And then finally he has to be like, okay, look, I didn't do anything. You've been doing this for a while. I caught you feeding off Stormlight when you were sick. And Kaladin, it's just more confusing, honestly. And he's like, how is this happening? And then he sees Syl kind of flying by, and he's like, it's her. She did this to me. And he calls her over.
He's really lashing out today.
He is.
Is that a fucking pun?
It is now, I guess.
It was now. And I do like that she, as they start the conversation, she's just like, hey, you're glowing. And he says, what have you done to me? And she has to be like, I don't know. I can only faintly remember things that I used to know. And so he's like, so you did do it. And she says, well, we did it. It's not me. It's not you. It's us together. He goes, that isn't very helpful. And she says, I know. And he goes, well, how do I get rid of it? And she's like, why would you want to get rid of it? And here's a conversation we've been having about Syl since almost the beginning. He goes, you're not a Windspren, are you? And she says, no. And he says, what are you then? And she says, I don't know. I bind things. Which he notes is that's how she always plays pranks on people, by like making stuff stick to other stuff. So this has been, the hints of this have been there since the beginning. That was the first time we ever saw her, was he tried to like put, he was in the slave wagon. He tries to put down his bowl and his bowl is stuck to his hand.
I don't know what to make of any of this.
Right?
Yeah.
And he sticks a rock to the wall with this power. And they see something. And she says, bind Spren. And he says that they're holding the rock in place. And she goes, maybe. Or maybe they're attracted to whatever you've done to make the rock stick there. Do rot Spren cause sickness? Or are they attracted to it? He says, everyone knows they cause it. And she says, okay, but... do wind spren cause the wind? Do flame spren cause fire? He's like, no, they don't, do they?
Hmm.
So we're getting into the nature of spren a little bit.
Yeah. As a surgeon's son, which, I mean, maybe that's what his dad taught him, but it's like, is that what his dad said? Like, yeah, the rot spren caused this. Just seems like weird logic.
We know that he learned from his dad that antiseptic scares rot spren away.
So
that seems to be what they think that does.
So they just reverse engineered it. It's like, all right, if antiseptic gets rid of these things and makes it all better, then maybe they cause the rot.
Right. I guess like other stuff would be like basically the logic puzzle she just used. It's like, well, do they cause the wind? Do they cause fire? It's like, no, we start the fire. The wind blows because it blows. Like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like he didn't think it through, but that's. Like, obviously, that couldn't be how it works.
He didn't start the fire. I knew that was coming. That was Wade.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly where I went to.
The flames spread lighted, and we're trying to fight it. And so burning down our houses is very concerning.
Kaladin's like, I need to get rid of this, okay? Not study it. She says, why? You've heard the stories. Men who walked on walls, who bound the storms to them. Wind runners. Why would you want to get rid of that?
That was one of the Radiant's orders, yeah?
Yeah, that in Dalinar's Last Vision, we learned that that was the name of one of the Radiant orders.
So Seth is a Windrunner?
That seems like a possibility, given what we know.
He walks on walls and roofs and everything except stone.
He has to walk on stone. He just doesn't like it.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything out here is stone. We don't have soil like that weird Shin place.
Yeah. It's going to be a race between the Windrunners and the Steelrunners from Skadrial. Awesome.
I like that, yeah.
It's like the Cosmere Olympics.
And so Kaladin is finally, it's like, wait, I'm doing what the Radiance did. No wonder I'm having all this bad luck. Like, I'm cursed. The Almighty has cursed me because the Radiance betrayed mankind, and now I'm doing the same thing that they did. And she goes, you're not cursed. He's like, well, how do you know? You just said you don't know what's happening. And so she's like, wait, you think I'm a curse? And he's like, you said you're part of it. So you think I caused all this, your failures, the deaths? And he doesn't respond. And then he realizes, oh, wait, silence is probably the worst response to give here. And she gets angry and takes off, which fair, probably.
Also, I don't want to cross Angry Syl. She's really little, but yeah, okay.
Tiny but fierce.
She's going to stick my bed to the roof with me in it.
Maybe. And Lopin is like, oh, man, you really shine in the shade. And Teft has to be like, I've talked to him. He's not going to say anything. And then Kaladin
about
takes off.
Syl?
He's got to go. I think about him, glowing.
Oh, okay.
And Cal takes off. He's like, I gotta get out of here. I gotta think about this. And so he spends, it seems like, the rest of the day wandering around thinking about this stuff. He can't go too far because, he's not allowed to leave the area. He's a slave. But they don't pay all that much attention to the Bridgemen, so.
I mean, when he said he was heading down towards the plains, roughly that area, I assume the guards thought, oh, he's going to go chuck himself in a chasm.
Yeah, maybe. We've seen him almost do that before.
Yeah. That's common enough among the bridge crews.
And he has this whole internal monologue where he's looking out at the shattered plains and the huge cracks. And he's like, man, we belong together, you and I. I'm just like you, shattered plains. And that's when he starts hearing music play. And he's like, what's that? And he sees a little campfire and a dude sitting at the campfire wearing a light eyes uniform with a little sword at his waist. And he's like, ah, shit, a light eyes. This is the last thing I need. But also, music is feminine. Light-eyed men, they sing. They don't play instruments unless they're ardents. But he does not want to deal with the light eyes, so he turns to go. And that's when this music stops and he's like, the guy starts talking to him about playing the flute. Colin's like, what are you doing here? Sitting, occasionally playing. And so we find out relatively quickly that this is Hoid / the King's Wit. I do like he revisits. He says when asked later, he's like sitting, occasionally playing with the minds of Bridgemen. And then Kaladin gets pissed off and is just going to leave. He's like, yeah, off with you. Glad you're going. Wouldn't want you to get too close. I'm rather attached to my Stormlight. Kaladin's like, wait, what did you? My spheres. Everyone knows Bridgemen are thieves, or at least beggars. Kaladin's like, oh, of course. Yeah, there's no way he could know about what's going on with me.
I know, he introduced himself as the King's Wit fairly quickly, but, as soon as he said, oh, I'm rather attached to my Stormlight, I'm like, oh, it's you.
And he tells him, I'm the King's Wit. It's my job to be witty. And I like Kaladin's like, saying confusing things is not the same as being witty. He's like, yeah, well, good call. We get a little bit of interesting Hoid, some vague comments. I began life as a thought, a concept, words on a page. Another time I was named for a rock, a beautiful one that became completely worthless for my wearing it. Whatever any of that means.
Precisely.
He does say, you can call me Hoid. And Colin's like, oh, that's your name? No, it's the name of someone I should have loved. Once again, this is a thing I stole. It's something we thieves do.
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
That explains why he uses the same alias on all these different planets.
Right. And so we find out this is a trailman's flute for a storyteller to use while he's telling a story. And Colin's like, you mean to accompany a storyteller being played by someone else? Well, no, I meant what I said. And so he starts to tell Kaladin's story about Darathil and the Wander Sail. And as he plays, the notes echo in the chasms and come back so that while he's talking, the music is still echoing back, so it's like the music is still playing. It's very, it's an interesting. I mean, I feel like it would be hard to do this somewhere else that didn't have that the same acoustics.
Yeah, he was just like, oh, man, I really hope that guy shows up tonight. Like, I know he's wandering. Please make sure he wanders this way.
Are you sure? Maybe the acoustics are just like a, like the location is just a cover for it actually being like magical.
Yeah, it could be. It could have been the same anywhere. It's just it would seem more magical, more obviously magical somewhere else. That's a fair point. I mean, I mentioned to you guys, I don't remember if it was last time, that Hoyd sometimes just he knows where he's supposed to be and when, but not why. So maybe he just knew he was supposed to be sitting here waiting for something or someone.
Yeah. But that does beg the question. It's like, okay, he knows he has to come here and just wait for someone. But he knows who Kaladin is, or at least he knows stuff about him. So I'm like, yeah. Well, how's he gained that knowledge if he wasn't quite sure he was headed here?
That's fair point.
Yeah. So many layers.
Old Kaladin sure Stormblessed.
I'm sure, like so many other things with Hoyd, we won't get the answers now.
And so Hoyd starts to tell the story of Darathil, a king from the Shadow Days who fought the Voidbringers. And as he's talking, Kaladin starts to see images in the smoke from the campfire, a face of a man, and other things as we progress. So after the war is done, Darathil is antsy. He's bored. He decides to do something interesting. He's going to build the biggest ship ever and sail the seas during a high storm to seek the origin of the Voidbringers. And the vessel is called the Wandersail, which that explains our title. Which I think it was Dak last time. Like, I have no idea what that could mean. Well, here you go.
Yep. Boat name. Seems obvious in hindsight.
We haven't done a lot of boats this book. I mean, Shallan showed up to Carbranth on a boat, but I think that may be about it. So yeah. It's not weird that it's not the first thing to pop into your head.
Well, I mean, it's like most of like this world is one big landmass. Like, you got some scattered islands, yep, and some other things off there. So it really does seem like on a world that's regularly rocked by horrific storms far beyond anything we see on Earth, boats may not be the best mode of transport.
Right? And I mean, Kaladin thinks that. It's like, what kind of nut job is trying to sail the sea on a high storm? That's insanity.
Yeah.
And so we get the story of the boat sailing off and the high storm hits and the boat is, they survive, but the boat is not well off. And they come across an island or an archipelago around an enormous whirlpool where it said the ocean drains. And the people who called themselves Uvara, the people of the Great Abyss, took them in. They're going to fix up their boat. They're going to get them back to health. But as they're living in this place with them, they start to notice that when somebody does something wrong, like the serving girl trips and drops the goblets as she's bringing them refreshment, the people murder her horribly.
As you do.
As you do. And the explanation is our emperor will not. Yeah, right. Our emperor will not suffer failure. But yeah, as Jamie said, this is the place you really want to live, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would move in, you know, maybe summer home.
They really set us up for us like, oh, yeah, everyone in this land agrees. It's great. Unlike people in Russia, they always argue. I'm like, OK. Where's the, and then like two paragraphs later, oh, there's the catch.
It's gotta be a catch. Yeah, and it's weird to me where it's like, oh yeah, these are things unlike back on Roshar, which, because it's the name of the planet and the continent, throws me off, but.
Yeah.
And so they start noticing that this happens kind of a lot, where people just get randomly horribly murdered for doing the smallest thing wrong. And finally they're like, okay, well, we can't let this keep going. They decide they're going to stop this emperor. What kind of monster would demand that such obviously peaceful people kill so often and so terribly? And they storm the tower and they come back out carrying, like, it says a desiccated corpse in fine robes and jewelry. And they're like, I mean, is this the emperor? He was all alone up in that top room and had clearly been dead for years. So apparently the emperor just stopped showing up at some point and everyone was too scared to go into the tower and find out what happened.
Oh boy.
This could have been Susabron.
I mean, I don't know. His priests were pretty, they controlled his life pretty thoroughly.
Yeah.
They were all up in his jammy for sure.
And so when the people find out everyone goes freaking nuts and starts like rioting and burning homes and tearing stuff up. And so Darathil's like, okay, we got to get out of here. So they go back to their ship, and their guide, Nafti, is like, can I come with you guys? And they're like, all right, come on.
I've got a volcano theory about that, but I'll save that for later.
Okay. And so they're like, Nafti, what the hell just happened? And she explains, like, she says, don't you see, traveling one? If the Emperor is dead and has been all these years, the murders we committed are not his responsibility. They are our own. And Callan's like, wow. He's like sitting back like, damn, that was a story.
I mean, it had twists, it had turns, I laughed, I cried, I threw up in my mouth a little bit. It had happened.
And he's like, is the story true? And Hoyt's like, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but, you know, could be.
How would we know? Did Darathil and his men return? And Hoyt's like, well, I mean, some people say they did. But how could they? The high storms only blow one direction. And his response, I guess the stories lie, huh?
So hang on, the high storms only blow one direction, which I think we did know from the maps, because there's like a windward and a leeward. That was how it works. But this is does Kaladin not know the planet is round? the storms just blow in 24/7, like, or whatever the equivalent of 24/7 is on this planet. It's like sooner or later that ship will come back round. Yeah.
Hey, you gotta be careful making assumptions about what the planet looks like. Do we know the planet is round?
Could be an egg.
It could be, you know, Discworld on the back of some elephants, on the back of a giant turtle or whatever.
Yeah, it could be a marble being played with by aliens.
Oh, yeah.
I do like, Hoyt says, fortunately, it's the best kind of lie, the kind I tell. I'm going to use that somewhere.
That's the best kind of lie. They lie, the kind I tell.
And then he's like, what did you put in the fire to make that special smoke? And Hoyt's like, no, just normal fire. And he says, the purpose of a storyteller is not to tell you how to think, but to give you questions to think upon. And Kaladin's like, the story means you take responsibility. And Hoyt's like, that's a good interpretation. So what is it that you don't want to take responsibility for? People see in stories what they're looking for, my young friend.
I like that line, a story doesn't live until it is imagined in someone's mind. That was cool.
Uh-huh.
I like that. I straight away was like, Dak's going to love that line.
You know me so well.
I like his bit about how he just made an idle comment. My comments are often idle. I can never get them to do any solid work. And then he gives Kaladin the flute. And he says, I've carried her for longer than you'd believe were I to tell you the truth. Take her for yourself. And Kaladin's like, I don't know how to play a flute. And he, well, then learn.
And what, you got something better to do?
Right?
Yeah, stop bridges. Shitting on my gift. Just take it. Be take like Picard and just figure it out.
Yeah. It only took Picard a whole lifetime in another body.
If Bri can figure out to play the holofarna, you can figure this out.
Yeah, it's not even meant for the number of arms Fry has.
Yeah.
He says, take good care of that blasted apprentice of mine. He really should have let me know he was still alive. Perhaps he feared I'd come rescue him again. And he said, tell him I graduate him. He's a full world singer now. Also, don't let him get killed.
So this is just like a random thing. Like, oh yeah, by the way, that other guy. Yeah, I was his master. I'm like, fucking what?
So like, yeah, Sigzil.
Please tell me at some point we get the prequel novella of Hoyt and Sigzil on the road together.
Right? I do want to see this.
It's just wacky hijinks of Hoyt constantly busting Sigzil out of jail with more and more impractical means.
Sigzil talked about how he's in the bridge cruise because he tried to murder somebody, but it wasn't his master, which now we know his master, so I guess he did try to murder Hoyt.
So yeah, no, like, so Hoyt was encouraging him.
Yeah, maybe. It wasn't my master, although I wanted to kill him.
And as
Sigzil's like, I'm going to kill that guy, and Hoyt's like, do it. Come on, buddy.
You won't.
We can turn his corpse into a boat. What?
Corpse boat. I once knew a friend named Spanky. Yeah, you had to be there.
And so he's like, oh, I'll give Sigzil the flute. No, you won't. It's a gift to you, Kaladin Stormblessed, which, as somebody pointed out, he knows Kaladin's name.
Well, Kaladin introduced himself as Kaladin, but yeah, Stormblessed he didn't know. Yeah, Kaladin didn't say it.
Yeah.
Kaladin isn't walking around being like, I'm Kaladin Stormblessed. You might have heard of me.
You might have heard of me.
And Hoyt's like, yes, yes, I have.
And so Hoyt just takes off. I guess he's got somewhere else to be. He's leaving the camp now.
Okay, bye now.
And as he watches him go, all of a sudden, Syl's right there. He's like, I don't like him. He's strange. And he's like, oh, hey, how long have you been there? And she's like, you were watching the story. I didn't want to interrupt. And she says, I am behind what's happening to you. It's both of us, but without me, you wouldn't be changing. So I'm taking something from you and giving you something in return. It's the way it used to work, though I can't remember how or when. And he starts to talk. She goes, hush, also, I'm talking.
Also, what are you taking from me?
Hmm? Well, she says what she's getting out of it is, like, if she leaves him, it'll stop, but she'll go back to the way she was before, floating on the wind, never remembering anything for longer than a few minutes. It's because of this connection that she can remember who and what she is. And so, yeah, I mean, Kaladin, you should feel like shit for wanting to get rid of her, if that's what's going to happen to her. You didn't even think to ask, like, how it might affect her. And so he's like, okay, but if I'm not cursed, why do I keep living when everybody else dies? And she says, well, because the bond makes you stronger. And so he decides that what he's been trying to avoid responsibility for is all of this shit. He keeps trying to blame something else, trying to blame him being cursed, or the Almighty hates him, or there's, you know, a conspiracy in the universe against him. But that's just avoiding responsibility for what's going on. And so he has to seize this opportunity, no matter how it changes him, no matter how it unnerved him and what burdens it might represent. And so he comes back to camp and everyone's eating stew and he's like, Teft, what do you know and how do you know it? And we finally get some sort of answer where Teft goes, when I was a youth, my family belonged to a secret sect that awaited the return of the Radiance. I thought it was all nonsense. And he says, how much do you know about what I can do? And Teft says, just legends and stories. No one really knows what the Radiance could do. And Callan goes, well, we're going to find out then. And that's the end of our chapters. So I
will find out. You kind of skipped over my favorite part there where he's like having kind of this inner turmoil where it's like, you know, I am having these thoughts of like, I don't want basically people to, even though I say I want to be able to save people, at the same time, like, I don't want to be dependable or dependent on, or I don't remember exactly how he said it, but it like rung real true to me. It's like, it almost reminded me of kind of the inner turmoil that, you know, as I'm always drawing back to Final Fantasy VIII, Squall kind of has this inner monologue. It's like, look, I don't want to be vulnerable and like have people depend on me. Like, everybody needs to figure it out for themselves because I can't do this.
It is a lot of responsibility to have all of that on you, all these other people's fates. And so you can get how he might want to avoid that in some way, make it some the fault of something else. So maybe it's some kind of turning point for Kaladin. Maybe things will get less shitty after he's taken responsibility from Hoyt's valuable lesson. Or maybe it's just another one of those times when we're like, hey, maybe things are finally getting less shitty for Kaladin. And it never, ever does. But that's what predicaments are about. So after these two chapters, after the epic story, what do you guys think? Where are we going? What's going to happen next? And oh, hold on. We'll do the chapter names again. These are a little more vague, I think. We're doing two chapters after this one. The next one is called The Journey, and the one after that is called An Honor.
Hmm. Did you say An Honor or End Honor?
A-N space honor.
Got it.
I think that'll be a pun, but I've speculated before that I think there is a shard named Honor on this world, so maybe we'll get some hints towards that. Who knows?
Hmm.
No idea what The Journey is meant to be about. So, my predicament. It's about Hoyt's story. And I think that Kaladin's looking at it the wrong way. His interpretation is not correct. He's taken the interpretation that he has something he needs to take responsibility for, because that's all he's done his whole life, is take responsibility for things. He's taken responsibility for other people's lives, for Tien's life, his bridge crew, his soldiers, stuff with his dad. He keeps taking responsibility. He's not a stranger to that. So I think that that's just where his head goes, because that's where his head always goes, to take responsibility. I think the interpretation should be looking at it the other way. He's not the people from the Great Abyss who needs to take responsibility. He's Derethil. He needs to show other people to take responsibility. Derethil was the captain, the outsider who landed on this place, saw what they were doing was wrong, and had to step up and show them, to teach other people to accept their responsibility. So I think this is Hoyt sort of manipulating Kaladin into being like Darathil. He's trying to convince him to, in some way, step up to the Light Eyes and show them what they're doing is wrong. So I don't quite know how we got to get there. Maybe this is going to be. We still think Kaladin will come into contact with Dalinar, and Dalinar will want to hear him out. Maybe Kaladin will recognize that as an opportunity to, rather than just go fuck the Light Eyes, show them, hey, this is fucked. You need to do better. And Dalinar's the sort of person who would listen to that. So I think that's the interpretation that's really coming through on this story. Not that Kaladin takes responsibility, but he teaches other people to do it instead. Yeah. So that's that one. I mentioned I have a tinfoil theory about that story as well. I think Nafti, the guide who came with them, is Naz. I have nothing to base that on other than the fact that their names start with the same letters.
I think Nafti was a girl.
Was it?
Hold on. Now yeah. I gotta go back and look.
Yeah, she's a female.
Well, fuck that up. Disregard.
I liked how much conviction you had based on a single letter.
It's true.
Two letters. They both went N-A.
Okay, two letters.
Does that make a difference? Okay, well, let's come up with another fucking crazy theory since that one failed. Hoyd's name was someone he should have loved. Maybe Hoyd is Adenalsium's real name.
Interesting, okay. He stole God's name.
It's like, you know, we speculated that Hoyd might have, like, didn't want to be involved in the shattering, but didn't actually do anything to prevent it. So maybe, and then Adenalsium got splintered and Hoyd's like, that's my bad. I'll take the name as an act of penance.
Okay, no, I can see
just
that.
To remind him what he's fighting for.
Hmm.
Maybe he took responsibility.
Hey!
There you go. Full circle.
Yeah, we did it, guys.
So I do like this idea about what Kaladin does or says inspiring the Light Eyes to be better, which we know that would probably be completely worthless on Sadeas. Hmm. Although, he's come around a little bit on some stuff in this last chapter, so maybe I'm not being generous enough there. But you're right that Dalinar is like exactly the kind of guy who that sort of thing would appeal to be like he's already telling the other high princes, you guys should be better than you are. So he's exactly the person that Kaladin could influence in that way. That's a good point.
Yeah. And like, yeah, maybe the hard truth. Like the Kaladin needs to accept, like the one responsibility he does have to take is because they mentioned this chapter is like I'm always blaming God or fate or everything else. He never mentions the Light Eyes, and maybe it's like no, maybe I should start blaming them, but not start, you know, just going fuck them. Maybe I need to show them the way. So it's kind of like taking responsibility in a different way.
Yeah, I do like he's like that's not on the list. He's like no, the Light Eyes deserve all the shit I give them.
This is the way.
Okay, I don't have much at all, other than we now know someone who has made one of these dying declarations. I think we will read that in an epigraph somewhere, and that might point us to whoever is capturing this information. I don't know what that will do once we know who does that necessarily, but perhaps Kaladin will read something. Or can Kaladin read? Kaladin can read, can't
Kaladin
he?
Can read glyphs, but not like books.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. At some point, I think he's going to hear whatever we're reading and then recognize the words.
Hmm.
And I think that might have something to, like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that's all going to tie in, but that's what I think there. It just feels a bit weird. Also, I was looking at the dates of the epigraphs and trying to piece together. They look like they're coming with a bit more frequency, which is sort of what Moash said.
I think it was Teft.
Someone said.
But yeah.
Teft. Someone said they're a bit more frequent. So, yeah, I don't really know what to do with that right now, but that's what I'm thinking there. Yeah, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of extra information. I'm not as bold as Dak with his out there volcano theories based on letters and things.
That's why I'm gonna
sit tight till I've got a little bit more information, I think. But I'm still pretty comfortable with where I left things last week, and I'm just gonna keep thinking on that tangent now.
Okay. I if Kaladin or found something where this was written or somebody read him, you know, wherever these things are being recorded, I'm trying to think who was present for this one, because like it was just the bridge crew that was hanging around, right? So is it a bridgeman who's been recording these all this time, or is Dak right and like those weird symbol head guys are invisibly hiding around here somewhere writing this shit down?
So I mean, that would be a nice tie-in.
Yeah.
Symbol ones. I don't know that it's a bridgeman, but like there were bridgemen that we know were standing around at that time, but who else is around? Like they're on a battlefield. It's a lot going on. I do think that it's got to be something more than just a person. Like you can't have a person just conveniently around when people die for their last words. Like that doesn't make sense. So something that's a bit more mystical, I would think. But that could be a nice tie-in to Chelan's story.
True. Bridgemen do see a lot of people die. So if you were going to have somebody, like who's around more death than a soldier or a bridgeman?
I mean, the bridgemen usually don't make it out, do they? Like our bridgemen
do. That's
true.
Yeah. Most of them end up dead quickly. That's a good point. You'd have to be like a surgeon or something, like Kaladin's dad. He's probably seen a lot of people die.
I don't think Kaladin's writing a book. Back on the side, Kaladin has been recording all the times that he's heard people die and their last words.
Oh yeah,
seems like an
in my spare time.
Take with you.
Yeah. Fair point. Okay, no.
Yeah, you guys both have some interesting stuff. I don't know. I really don't know where we're going long term. Still, like I feel like every time I think of something, it seems less and less likely each week. So I guess let's take it piece by piece. So the Sidaeus Dalinar thing seems to be going well. Obviously there's going to be the Parshendi have changed tactics. So like I'm much more interested in finding out what's going on with them. I think maybe, you know, I kind of theorized that maybe like winning the Gem Heart is not the most important thing to them, or even like, you know, obviously they're not trying to get back at the Alethi for anything that we know of. I think it's more of just like a strategy game for them, like a way of life. So maybe just combat is in their culture, just like it's in the Alethi culture. And they're like, actually, maybe that's why Gavilar was like, we could be best buds. And then the Parshendi were like, oh no, we like combat. So like, if you don't want to fight with us, then I guess we're going to like kill you.
That's how we or say maybe, hello in our country.
Right. Or maybe like I said last week or the week before, whenever it was, maybe it was orchestrated by an Alethi to make it look like the Parshendi had done it, but really they hadn't. I don't know. And so we got that piece. I don't know that this is much as a predicament as maybe just like drawing a conclusion from words that were said, but the Hoid has that one thing where he's like, yeah, I actually like have been hanging out looking for an acquaintance, but like really I've been more hiding from him than anything else. I think he's talking about Kelsier. We already know the Ghostblood guys were looking for him from one of the interludes. And so I think that's who he was specifically talking about in the conversation with Kaladin. So I'm just going to draw that conclusion based on the empirical evidence that I have from the other part. What else can I say? I assume Kaladin's going to learn a little bit about how his powers work, and maybe that'll help unravel the mystery of his power and Syl at the same time. Talking specifically maybe about the chapter titles, the journey just makes me think of like the great journey from Halo. So I don't really know. I don't really know what the journey is. I guess like for me,
Guilty Spark is going to be there, and
yeah, 343 Guilty Spark.
No.
Yeah. He's super obnoxious as always. I don't really know like whose chapter it is. So I guess we'll know based on whose chapter it is, kind of more of what may be going on. But yeah, I assume somebody's going to go on a trip, or they're going to talk about going on a trip or something. I don't know. Journey and honor. I mean, yeah, if we are predicting that one of the shards is honor and on this planet, then maybe an honor, maybe that has something to do with what's going on. And we've talked about, I've theorized that maybe like the powers are manifested by being involved with like a moral code, or like being chivalrous, honorific, whatever you want to call it. So like perhaps the power Kaladin has is derived from the Shard Honor, and maybe that's what that chapter is going to be about, him unraveling that, figuring that out. Or Teft explaining it. Maybe Teft knows that just that much. I don't know. So yeah, that's what I'm guessing the chapter could be about. Hopefully. I'd like Kaladin to kind of understand what's going on with him, so that'd be good.
Okay, so if Dak's right and there's an honor shard, and then you're also right about, you know, the powers being based on you acting in a way that is related to the shard, then... So we talked about it, like Kaladin was being valorous or whatever, and that was attracting whatever. I guess Syl now says that the powers are because of her and him and their interaction with each other. Mm-hmm. So it would be he was attracting Syl, I guess, because of how he's acting, if that was the case, right? So
yeah, could be. And like, because I think she even kind of like hints at that, right? It's like, well, the rot spren doesn't cause the rot. The water spren don't cause the water, the fire. They're attracted by those things. So like him acting in an honorable way attracts her. So maybe she's an honor spren. Maybe that's what she is. That's interesting. Cool.
Yeah. That's
and maybe theory. maybe if the shard is honor, that's why she's more like sentient, because she's like directly a spren of the shard.
I mean, she wasn't more sentient until she made the connection. So right. It could be.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there's no, I think no matter how close you got to a fire spren or water spren, I don't think they'd become sentient. So I don't know how they would make that connection with somebody. Whereas if there's like an extra power, because essentially if we assume that that all living creatures are made of are made from Shard's power, like in some of the other worlds, then we can assume that there's a deeper connection between a creature that maybe is like a spren of the shard and the rest of humanity, because humanity is a larger manifestation of the power, perhaps.
Okay. So, okay. But that brings me to another question where, so if that's the case, say call, I like that name, actually, let's call her an honor spren, and she's attracted to him being an honorable dude. Kaladin seems honorable, right? I mean, yeah. I almost feel like Dalinar might be more honorable than him, but let's not quibble about, you know, that's the thing. She's attracted to him because he's being honorable, and their relationship gives him these powers, which she says are make him like the Windrunners, one of the orders of the Knights Radiant. Mm-hmm. We know that there were 10 orders of Knights Radiant.
Mm-hmm.
So are there 10 shards that there's spren representing each of those shards?
That's a good question. Maybe it's not that simplified. Maybe even though she's an honor spren, there's different types of honor spren, and she is giving the powers of Windrunner. And maybe there's like other types of honor spren that each have like a different spin on power if there's different orders.
Okay.
That's just a guess. I don't know. Because like we know that if we assume that Seth has the same power, if they're both, let's say they're both Windrunners, we know he has some kind of shard power, or not shard power,
some sort of power, you
know, Stormlight power, Stormlight. Yeah, we'll just call it Stormlight power for lack of a better word, because I don't know. He obviously, or not obviously, but we've never seen him interact with a spren, so maybe there's different ways that the power can manifest in you, and her being a Bren and connecting with him is just one of the ways that can happen. I don't know.
Yeah, there could be multiple ways, because we've also theorized that whatever weird shit is happening to Dalinar and whatever weird shit is happening to Shallan might be related in some way. So like, are there other brands of honor spren hanging around each of them, or is it like a completely different thing that's going on to...
Yeah, okay. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. Just taking guesses, because, yeah, I mean, we're 80% through and we're like, I'm still like, oh, what's going on?
But no, you had some good stuff this week.
Yeah, sometimes, stuff falls out.
Can I piggyback off this and just go full crazy volcano shit?
Go for it.
Okay, dude, yeah.
Love it. Yeah. Love these moments with you, buddy.
I mean, you're positing that Syl is an honor spren and like has, you know, pieces of the, you know, the shard power, and she's giving them to Kaladin in some way. fuck it. What if Syl is the Shard? What if Syl is Honor? And she's just fuck. And like maybe similar thing happened to Preservation. Like she got cut off from her memories, and so she doesn't actually have conscious thought or anything of what she's doing. She's just, this is all she can think to do.
I feel like we've had this theory before, where Syl is a Shard.
Did we?
I don't remember exactly when, but I feel like that somebody has posited this.
Okay. But yeah. How about that?
I don't think it was me. So if somebody posited it, it'd have to been Jamie, I guess, or maybe Dak, and he forgot about it.
I think it was Dak.
It's possible, I guess. I don't know. The listeners will know.
Syl is a Shard. Rock seems to know what Syl is. And so that tells me, unless he's actually met Syl before, like exactly Syl, and then Syl doesn't remember, there must be more of them around, I would think.
Well, it could be. I mean, she could still be like a piece of the Shard. There could be a bunch of pieces.
Definitely, yeah.
I think I think that like was the theory somebody had already also.
Like the Aeons, the what were the things on Syl?
Yeah, Seance. Yeah. You're right, Seance,
yeah.
And Skaze, yeah, or whatever.
So splintered, yeah. They're splintered. So, yeah, it could be.
Yeah, was Anna killed? Mm-hmm. Like, and Syl is just one of, like, the splinters going around and acting.
Could be.
Yeah.
I mean, if we know Odium's... We know from previous, from The Lost Metal, that Odium was going around killing shards. And well, Odium's here...
I think in that letter, which we like, that was the epigraph for part two. I think it just, I don't know if it said it directly or not, but like it sort of talks about how Odium was the one who fucked up the two shards on Syl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he likes to fuck shit up for sure.
So yeah, if he's here, and if there was another shard here, Honor or Valor or whatever, then it could be.
So the Face in the Storm said Odium's coming back. So like, did another shard hide here, and Odium does not know about them, and then like. You know, through the communication network or whatever the fuck, Odium's like, oh crap, I missed one, and he's coming back.
Could be. Let me see, hold on. Think back to the letter that we read.
Autonomy is just pointing back at Roshar. It's like, haha, you dickhead, you fucking missed one.
Oh gosh. Okay, hold on. I went back to read the letter to see what clues there might have been about that. So... You asked me before why I'm so concerned. It's for the following reason. Addy was once a kind and generous man, and you saw what became of him. Race, on the other hand, was among the most loathsome, crafty, and dangerous individuals I had ever met. He holds the most frightening and terrible of all the shards. Ponder on that for a time, you old reptile. Because I assure you, Race will not be similarly inhibited. One need only look at the aftermath of his brief visit to Syl to see proof of what I say. In case you've turned a blind eye to that disaster, know that Aeona and Skye are both dead, and that which they held has been splintered, presumably to prevent anyone from rising up to challenge Race.
Yeah, there we go.
So, yeah, okay. That, if that shard is Odium, which we've heard the name Odium pop up in this book, and we know from Lost Metal that Odium is a shard who's out there killing people, so it makes sense to put two and two together there. Yeah. He could be coming back. Okay. But actually, I was going to say, Joe, you had several good things, because I remember thinking as you progressed, I'm like, oh, I want to talk about that. But then you would say something else, and I'm like, oh, I want to talk about that. And then I would forget the thing that you said before that. And then I think that happened like 3 or 4 times as you talked. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And so I don't remember most of the things that I was like, oh, we should address that. But yes, good theories, fun, interesting stuff. Oh, moving on. We don't actually have any emails or new patrons or new reviews this week, so just skip through all of that stuff. If you'd like to send us an email, the address is thesanderlanch@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram, X, Facebook, Patreon, where this week I actually managed to get up 2 new episodes of my coverage of Defiant, and there's only a couple of them left for me to edit, and then I will need to start reading something else. So if you're interested in my reactions to Brandon's work as I read it for the first time, check out the Patreon. For next time, we're going to read 2 more chapters. As I said, that's 58 and 59, which will be after that, the chapters in Crucy for a while, although we'll have 1 more 2 chapter section before the end of the book. But we're getting close. We've only got, I think, 6 episodes after this of this book. We're 81% of the way through. We've been doing like 3% per episode.
so 81% of the book or 81% of the narrative? Because I assume the Ars Arcanum is, I mean, I assume this book has an Ars Arcanum. The rest of them did.
It does have an Ars Arcanum. We are 81% of the way through the Kindle, which does book, which does include the Ars Arcanum. But the Ars Arcanum actually is not huge in this one, I don't think. If I jump to it, yeah, the Ars Arcanum starts at 100%. So,
oh, okay.
It does not take up that much. Although now that you mention it, we may talk about the Ars Arcanum because there's some interesting stuff about Fabrials in there, which we've only, you know, glimpsed some little bits of Fabrials, so that'll be interesting. But yes, we are 6 more episodes until the end of this book, and then what's next? Well, we'll find out. I mean, we know what's next Stormlight wise, but are we going straight there? Who knows? Except for me, I know.
Yeah, okay, guys, come hang out with me on Twitch, Joe Show Play. Just another plug for you guys. Playing Rebirth, it's quite possibly the greatest game of all time, so come check it out.
I need to play. I don't have time to play.
Yeah, look, you know, it's going to take you probably around 90 hours, so you're just going to have to get through it pretty slowly.
That's fair. Dak, where do people go to see your X-Men thing that you're talking about?
Oh, we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube.
What do they search for?
If you look for Scythe Inc., as in the Pokemon, Scythe with an R on the end. Like, it's like, yeah, they're all under there. The X-Men, the Power Rangers, Batman, and the original one he's doing, which I think I've had minor parts in all of them. No, I didn't get into Batman. That's right.
Oh,
that's okay. Well, I mean, not yet. Only 2 episodes are out. There might be more in future, but yeah, plenty of that. Plenty more on that.
Have you finished writing the episodes that you were writing?
Oh yeah, yeah. The chap in charge has sent the scripts out to everyone, and like so it's a 2-part episode. The first one has, I think he said everyone except 3 have gotten their lines back to him. So as soon as those lines come back, he's going to start production. Nice. He did a live stream after X-Men 97 started coming out where he talked about that show, how the original cartoon influenced his show, and where his current show is up to. So, so he's gotten lines for most people for at least episode 1, and then episode 2 will follow shortly after. But yeah.
Pretty sweet. Yeah. Have you guys watched X-Men 97?
I have. I watched the latest episode last night.
Mm. Oh, is there a third one out now? I only watched the first two.
Third one's just dropped, yeah.
Nice.
Okay. Should I watch all the way through the old cartoon first?
I certainly didn't.
You might appreciate a bit more, but
I mean, not, I saw episodes here and there as a kid, but like, and I, so I kind of know what it's about, but like, I didn't ever do a deep dive.
So I rewatched most of it. I don't think I finished actually a couple of years ago. Of the original 90s X-Men cartoon, and like, stories are great, voice acting was great, and it's probably the most faithful to the absolute bonkers shit that goes on in the in the comics that we've ever had and are likely to ever have. But the animation and some of the writing has just not quite held up. So
yeah, it's, I mean, you could understand that. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you got to observe that going in. It's still it's still a fun ride, but it can be a bit. Oh, okay. When you're watching it, just like some bits are just a bit janky and whatnot. I certainly had fun watching it, but I'm a massive X-Men fan. You know, sure. I love seeing the vampiric pterodactyl man in a pair of underpants. Yeah. Like, fucking love him.
Who doesn't? So,
yeah.
I mean, I love the Spider-Man 90s cartoon, which was kind of the same ilk, came out.
Yeah.
After that.
They even had a crossover.
Yeah, they'd had a crossover. So, like, I'm totally down for it. I just didn't know if it was required viewing. But if I just need to know all the characters, then I'll just watch the new one.
That's so, fine.
Yeah, I think you can get away with just watching X-Men 97.
When you said you need to watch the whole thing, I assumed you meant like rewatch right now, because I definitely watched religiously as a kid that show. And so it may be that, you know, I still have all those memories. So it I didn't need to. I'm trying to think what about this. I feel like the first couple episodes where Jubilee is introduced, like, by themselves gives you enough information to be proceeding on with. Although Bishop is there from the beginning in this one, and I'm not sure that fits with the end of the original.
Yeah.
I don't remember Bishop being there, but
He showed up periodically throughout the cosplay. Well, yeah. I don't remember.
He shows up and tries to murder Gambit or whatever. But
yeah, murder.
Yeah,
you know.
But speaking of Gambit, my favorite in the original.
Yeah, that shows the only reason Gambit is popular at all. Like he's in the comics, but he's not the biggest player in the comics. But he was so fucking popular in that show that like everyone's like, when Gambit, when
he
Gambit.
He was amazing in that show.
Yeah.
I love him. There's a lot to love about that show. The weird thing is, like, I know that the old show so well from when I was a kid still, that the new show is, like, it's eerie because there's so many similarities and yet so many differences.
Yeah.
Even some of the voices are exactly what I remember, and then it just makes the ones that are different, like, that much more weird.
They stand out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Logan, I'm like, why do you sound so weird, Wolverine? What are you doing?
Because the voice actor got older.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's kind of hard to like recreate that.
Well, I mean, like, the guy who played Magneto is dead, and that was one of the, like, his voice really, like, resonates in the original one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was when they pitched the show to Kevin Feige. It's like, we want to do a revival of the 90s X-Men cartoon. Like, he said, okay, I have two conditions before I agree to this. And they said, okay. And he said, one, we have to use the original theme song. And I've gone, well, obviously, yes. Two, do you reckon we can get the original voice actors back? And they've gone, we can try, except for Magneto and Cyclops, because they both died.
Is Gambit the original one? He sounds very different, I feel like.
I think they recast Gambit, but the bloke who played Gambit in the original show has another role in this show. I think I read that.
Hmm. I saw a lot of people online complaining about Rogue's figure not being what it once was. But,
yeah, that.
That's once again a very 90s comics. Morph had such a small role, I feel like, in the original, and hopefully he'll be bigger. Because he dies, like, right away. But then it turns out he's not dead.
They put him in the first episode just so they could say, oh, look, one of the characters died. This show is, like, we're playing for keeps. And then fans, like, they did, then they picked Morph because they said, let's pick a character absolutely no one gives a single ounce of a shit about in the comics so that no one will care when he dies. And then, of course, he showed up for one episode and died, and the fans were like, we love that guy! And the execs were like, for fuck's sake, all right, bring him back.
Where's Morph? We need Morph!
I like how they did that in the song, in the new one, where it's like, Morph's in the song, that's great, Professor X is in the song. And then it's in the first episode, you find out that he died. And so then in the second episode, he's not in the song.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked about that. I was like, wait, this must be a fake out. He can't be dead when the episode starts. That doesn't make any sense. Why is he in the song?
It's not really much of a spoiler, but the start of episode 3 in the credits, Magneto gets his own bit as well with the name.
I thought that was episode 2. I thought he had it in episode 2.
I must not have noticed in episode 2. Anyway.
Anyway, sorry, y'all. We really, that was another
hey, deep X-Men, rabbit hole come
we've
on.
Gone down.
X-Men be great.
I'm going to have to go watch that the third episode now. But so, yes, remember, we're doing two chapters for next time, chapters 58 and 59. Thank you, everyone, for listening, for all our patrons. You guys are awesome. People on the Discord, if you want to join our Discord, you can find the link at our website, www.thesanderlanch.com. Two chapters for next time. And wasing to the time of next. Colo? P.S. Fasher. Crab at thee. X-Men.
no, we
to me, my X-Men. Go stop the border.